We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting scene in the Daily Telegraph and read by Brian Perkins.
Margot Kidder is in Montreal to perform in the Vagina Monologues and has had parts in a dozen films.
Thanks to David Christie of Oxford for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome, first on my right, Francis Ween and Mark Steele. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Linda Smith. Francis, who's revealed she can't leap tall buildings with a single bound.
You don't sound at all well, if I may say so. Is there something the matter?
Francis, who's revealed she can't... Do you know the answer?
Yes, it's Superwoman. Is that right? Yeah, and her Bristol flats. Famous rhyming slang. That Tony and Cherie, what a pair of Bristol flats, eh? She was caught out and she had to go public, give an extraordinary statement to the nation. Lots of people said it was very moving, including the woman I live with, but I'm afraid it didn't move me. It seemed to be a sort of cross between Princess Diana on Panorama and Blair reading the lesson at Princess Di's funeral. Tear-jerking, over-hammy delivery. I half expected Blair to come out after and say, truly, she is. People's Cherie. The people's friend, available from all good news agents. There was this thing where the many extraordinary things she said was that I choose my friends very carefully. I thought, God help us if she starts choosing them carelessly. As far as I can see, her retinue of friends seems to consist mainly of strange toxin scrubbers and lifestyle gurus and people who release your sexual chakra, whatever that may be. And she'd had to buy these flats because they're in penury, the Blairs. It was heart-tugging. She said they had no money at all. And they only have Chequers and Downing Street to live in, plus the house in the constituency. And the only capital they have, she said, was a £500,000 blind trust. So they had to start going to property speculation to make some money. The Blair Rich Project, as it's known. And...
What fascinates me, they just seem to buy these flats just sort of so casually. It's like, to them, it's like nipping out to get the milk. I'm just popping out. Oh, we haven't got any flats. Can you nip out and get one? And then she comes back and goes, no, well, they were on special offer, a little bit cheaper, so I got two. You know what she should do?
It's a bit baffling, though, that all this was in the mail, because, you know, you're reading pages and pages of it about property speculation and alternative therapies before you realise it's not the normal mail. I just thought Cherie was the guest editor for a week.
In an emotional speech, Sherry Blair has sought to excuse her role in the Peter Foster scandal on the grounds that she's not Superwoman. The statement will come as a blow to the mail, which has already ordered 100 weight of kryptonite, just in case.
I did what every woman or every mother, because this is what every mother would do, of course, when your son goes to university. What mother doesn't buy them two flats, knock down prices, organised by a bloke who's an ex-con man who was married or went out with a page 3 model who's been in the jail in 3 different continents, who you know through his girlfriend, who also happens to be an ex-topless model who sells you thousands of pounds worth of crystals every week and gives you a massage of aromatherapy? What mother wasn't do that? Buy two flats. That's what every mother does. You sit on any bus and there'll be a woman there with her teenage kid going, oi, any more cheek out of you and I'll only buy you one flat in Bristol.
You know, it's a shame, Mark, because she speaks ever so well of you.
Right, Mark, what's 192 minus 74?
I would imagine that this is a reference to the fact that the directory inquiries number is soon going to be discontinued, and it's now going to be replaced with Oh, well, 118, I suppose.
No. Cool. It's been modernised, streamlined.
Modernised and streamlined for choice. This is the idea that now there's going to be lots of different directory inquiries numbers to give people choice. Well, you don't need choice. That's all right as it is. They just go, what number do you want? And choice, and they're reasonably friendly. But now I suppose the choice will be that, oh, you can have a rude one you can ring up. He goes, what? What number? Who do you want? Mr. P. Simpson, what do you want to ring him up for? He's a wanker. And they'll probably be like the 0898 numbers and do all they can to keep you on the line as long as possible. Oh, I see. You want to ring Woolworths, do you? Well, let me have a look, and what will you be buying once you get there?
The Director General of Communications said, for the first time, consumers will have an easy choice of directory inquiry services at a range of different prices. Which sounds much easier than the old days when you just rang one number for free. Linda, who's up in arms about American publishing rights?
This is the dossier on Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. We're not allowed to see them. I think they're too rude. So America's reading them for us, and the Lib Dems think that they've been tampered with. Well, of course, they have been tampered with because they've had to be transformed into pop-up form for... for George the slack-jawed president to read. But there's also then, in the same sort of territory, there's the Scud missiles, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Which America now have had to give back, having stolen them from the Yemen. Moving forward, American-Yemen relationships, no end, really. So I don't know if they're allowed
to... The joy of it was that it was meant... The first day it happened, it was heralded as a great coup in the war against terrorism, these American troops leaping onto this boat and stopping these Scud missiles reaching Yemen. And then a day later, the Yemeni government just rang Washington and said, there's no law against buying Scud missiles from North Korea. Get off. And they checked with the law, and they said, no, it's perfectly true, there's no law against it. We can all buy them. We can order them for our bonfire parties next year. It's wonderful. You can have a little high street chain called Scud you like, and you can...
It's described as an inland waterways cruise boat in Korea. And imagine these, you know, eight people from Saga with knotted handkerchiefs playing cribbage on the after deck, sitting on these... Where are we going? Going to Yemen. Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
They've made their mind up, I think, haven't they, on a war, America. And so that's what this... Oh, well, it depends on what the dossier says. And then they just go, oh, well, we'll just have a look at it. No one else can see it anyway. And you think that even if the dossier proves that Iraq's got no weapons of mass destruction, the Americans will still decide that we have to bomb it because the grammar was wrong or something, or the plot was too thin, or the character of Tariq Aziz was just left hopelessly up in the air and unresolved. But what's in Saddam's mistake, it seems to me? See, whenever he comes on the telly and talks about this, he's all belligerent and he's got his sword and he does this big warrior thing in America, the infidels and all this. And I think, well, he should learn, you see. He should get Mrs. Hussein to go out and do the thing to the camera and to say, all I was doing was what any mother would have done. To protect my family, I just had a few weapons of mass destruction. The whole world would go, oh, you've got to feel for her.
The United States has been accused of editing Iraq's weapon dossier sent to the United Nations last weekend. The enormous length of the dossier can be explained by the fact that most of it is taken up by a chapter written personally by Saddam entitled What I Did in My Summer Holidays. Alan, listen to this.
Vera Lynn.
Was it?
Alan, who agrees the Tories should be led by the quiet man as long as he's wearing hush puppies?
This is stuff about in the jungle. It's the stirring of Heseltine. It's the, as we say often here, it's the IDS of March, isn't it? They're going to gather around the poor old sod and stick a rubber dagger in him, which will probably kill him. My reading of it is that Heseltine has made no secret of the fact that he likes Blair. What he actually wants to do is shaft IDS so that Blair will be there forever. I don't think Heseltine has anything too much for Kenneth Clark, does he?
Well, he's certainly supporting the campaign for regime change. I think yes. That's what's behind it all, yes.
That's a lovely show, Changing Regimes with Carol Smiley. It was Turkey and Iraq last week. Very funny, because they both hate Kurds and human rights, so, oh, dear, what a muddle.
The former Tarzan of British politics offered a rallying cry for disaffected Tories as soon as he'd put his teeth back in. So we start round two with a food label seen in Tesco's.
Tesco Christmas pate, used by the 23rd of December.
Thanks to Chris Barber to Fishbone for sending that. Francis, why is the government's transport policy wide off the mark?
The way you said wide, it sounded like a pun, but maybe it was just your Benelin stirring in your loins. Well, I assume it's to do with Alistair Darling.
It is.
And his road plan.
Good. Right.
Alistair Darling's in charge of transport. He's the 83rd transport secretary in the last 5 years. And his big idea, following Stephen Byers and all his many distinguished predecessors, John Prescott and thousands of others whose names are forgotten, his big idea is wider roads will solve congestion. Because it's true, if you're driving along a very narrow road...
But that's
feels
not what he
tight,
said,
feels
is
congested.
It, John Prescott?
No, but it wasn't Prescott who said it. That's their clever trick. They've stopped Prescott doing transport, and they put this man Darling
good,
in charge
really,
of it.
Because I suspect language isn't his first language.
Actually, it's bad. I'll tell you why it's bad, because Prescott has to be given other jobs. And did you see this week, this thing about David Blunkett has gone off to convalesce until after Christmas because he's had a stomach operation. And it said some of his responsibilities have been given to John Prescott, including... Prescott is now responsible for... I don't want to frighten people, but... Prescott is now responsible for counter-terrorism and... home defence measures. He is now in charge of all that, Prescott.
Is he...
He is Captain Mannering, in fact. He is... Seriously, if, you know, at a time when we're told by Blair Al-Qaeda might strike at any minute at the news quiz or anywhere else, Prescott is our lone defence against all this.
Oh,
Alistair Darling is, of all the soulless ministers, he's the most extraordinarily passionless character. And to be honest, I've never disagreed with anything he's ever said, because you just sort of drift off while he's... And Paxman should say that, really. When he's done his big spiel and half-answered a question, Paxman should, at the end of it, say... I'm sorry, I was miles away.
The funny thing about Alistair Darling is he doesn't seem to have noticed that he's lost most of his novelty Groucho Marx face. He's just got the eyebrows, the cigars, the moustache. It's all gone. He doesn't.
Well, he used to have a beard in the old days.
Did he?
Yeah, when Labour got in, he had a beard.
God, he must have been a character then when he had his beard.
The Transport Secretary, Alistair Darling, has announced the biggest road-building programme for 20 years, with more than a dozen motorways and trunk roads being widened. It's the biggest roads U-turn since John Prescott ordered his driver to go back and fetch his packed lunch. Linda, listen to this.
Well, I don't know, but it's not very Christmassy.
You'll notice we didn't give the question to Alan, though he's put his towel down on your seat already.
You know this one. This is about the German ambassador.
Is it?
The German ambassador thinks that the Second World War is not being taught in a way that makes the Germans come out looking very good. This is surprising. There's so much body of opinion, led often by me, which could teach an alternative. But the German ambassador is upset that any school teaching about the First World War tends to dwell on the fact that the Germans behave rather badly.
It is true that people are obsessed with Hitler. Like, if you've got cable TV... Every History Channel, if it wasn't for the Third Reich, wouldn't have a single programme to show you. It's, you know, like Adolf Hitler, his secret role in World War II. When Nazi facelifts go wrong.
Yes. Celebrity big Nazi.
Excited reconstructivists, because there's a thing running on Channel 5 at the moment about if Hitler had taken over Britain. And they never say if the Italians had won. How it wouldn't be that bad, would it?
Nelson's column would be replaced by a gigantic pepper mill. The German ambassador vehemently protested against the stereotypical portrait of Germans as humourless Nazis before clicking his heels and sweeping eastwards out of the room. Alan, whose dodgy customs have left red faces in the Green Channel?
Oh, yeah. This, the booze cruise people who come over and try to get past the customs and fail. The customs have taken a great deal of booze off them, a lot of cigarettes, and £22 million in cash. But they put it in a shed without a lock on it, and a lot of it's gone walkabout. And slight suspicion is attaching to members of Her Majesty's Customs and Excise, to whom I pay that, and I'd be very sorry to see these people dragged out, made to look ridiculous before having their testicles cut off and stuffed in their mouths. But that's what they're doing. HM Customs and Excise have taken stuff, and it's all gone walkabout, like heroin and crack in police stations.
I certainly think we've got to do something to stem the tide of these bogus customs and excise people. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, a few of them are genuine, but I think most of them are crooks.
The National Audit Office claims that vast amounts of cigarettes, alcohol and even drugs seized by customs and excise has been sold on the black market. From now on, holidaymakers coming through the Green Channel will be asked if they have any tobacco, alcohol or illegal goods in their luggage. And if not, if they'd like some. And before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Brighton and Hove Evening Argus.
In a comment that there will be a 30-hour shutdown of the Brighton line over Christmas to carry out emergency engineering services, a spokesman from South Central said this will not cause any disruption to rail services, as we'll not be running any.
Thanks to Alison and Malcolm Furnell for that. Francis, listen to this. Francis, who's out of their tree because of an artist who's out of hers?
Oh, I thought it was going to be a nice operatic question. Instead, it's about Tracy Emin. And she was commissioned by the Tate to do their Christmas tree. They have this silly thing every year at the Tate where they commission someone like Damien Hirst to decorate the Christmas tree at the Tate. And then they're surprised when he comes in with a chainsaw and chops it down and leaves a few cow's innards lying on the floor. And this year they got in Tracy Emin, who's achieved it by having a blank space, basically, with a little bit of paper saying, give money to the London Lighthouse. And she's donated the tree. She went and bought a tree. I think one of her many assistants probably bought it and delivered it to this AIDS place, the Lighthouse. And so there's just a gap in the Tate where her tree should be. And the Tate say they're very pleased with this because they feel she has risen to the challenge, because they wouldn't want a boring old conventional tree with decorations and lights and things like that. And it's much more fun for visitors to the Tate to see this blank space with a little scrap of paper. So she's done them proud.
I love the idea of Tracy Emin's assistants. Like Santa, isn't it? Tracy Emin's very busy at this time of year, so not all the Tracy Emins are real Tracy Emins.
And her father, Iddy.
Tracy Emin was commissioned by Tate Modern to create their Christmas tree, but instead she left an empty space in the gallery. Tate Modern insisted that the invisible Christmas tree is a real work of art and does have a corporeal existence, like Santa Claus, the lost city of Atlantis, and the Conservative Party. 2 points to Francis. Mark, fill in the blank. Wake me up at... where?
It's Liverpool Street Station. The people who run the trains out to Essex, it would have to be Essex, I'm sorry to say, are dishing out these placards that you can stick, tie around your neck. When
it's
you're
for drunk people, isn't it? When you, after a Christmas party, you get drunk, and you hold this.
And they give you a free pen as well, so you can write your destination on it.
No, it's a really good scheme. And Richard Branson's got one as well for on his line, so that you don't go past your stop. It's a scheme where you fall asleep for 2 hours and wake up and you're still in the same place. And he's been running it for years. I went all the way down to Margate and back. I woke up and I was back where I started once.
Labels read, wake me up at blank. And if you don't fill it in, don't worry, because on arrival at Lowestoft, you'll still get your blankety-blank checkbook and pen. Linda, why has a Christmas race been accused of foul play?
Look, Simon, I'm not Superwoman. The papers were delivered to my house today, but I didn't actually look at them because I didn't think that would be right. But my lifestyle guru and detox expert, Alan, glamorous former lap dancer, has written the word Walthamstow on a piece of paper.
About Walthamstow dogs. It's a wonderful story. Last week on the news, because we had this conceit about getting rid of fox hunting in it, but every year having a thing where we had turkey hunting, and these mad buggers would go over fences shooting turkeys once a year. But Walthamstow Dog Track invented something, or came up with something called the Gobble Cup, or the Gobbler's Cup. And this was a turkey race. And the winner would get eaten, and the other 11 would get off. Seems a bit nuts. It's not the thing. If the turkey finds out, it's a slow bloody race, I can tell you. But the RSPCA stepped in, and these turkeys have now gone to a rest home for turkeys somewhere in Gobblehead. And they haven't eaten it, but they were going to eat the winner. I mean, really, bookmakers.
Oh,
don't you love them?
So that's they're true. All running along with their giblets in a bag. Full of Jamie Oliver's special stuffing. Going, him, he looks tasty. Oh, I'm all bone, me, nothing of me. Oh, that's evil. Yeah. Oh, dear. Oh, no, that's put me right off me nut roast at Christmas.
Yes, 12 Christmas turkeys have been given the chance to run for their lives in a race to escape the dinner table. They've been spared after pressure from animal rights campaigners. They argue that if people really want to pay to watch Christmas turkeys fighting for survival, they could always watch BBC Choice. Right, Alan, before I ask you the next and indeed the final question, I should advise those of you with children at home to cover their little ears for the next 2 minutes. Alan, who's got their claws out for the vicar?
Oh, it's this awful... It's awful Reverend Rayfield, I think his name is, from mm-hmm. either Maidstone or Maidenhead, one of those places a long way from here, somewhere foreign. But I think it's Maidenhead, isn't it? Anyway, this fool went into church, and there was a congregation, a Christmas congregation full... a pre-Christmas congregation, full of people like Ulrika Johnson and her child, and whoever else's child it happens to be. But anyway, it's Ulrika Johnson and a lot of other children. And this bloke stood up and said, Santa Claus would have to be dead... because there are 2 billion children in the world, and if the reindeer tried to get all of them on Christmas Eve, they'd be vaporised. This was a lesson in theoretical physics for five-year-old children with little wings on and little tiaras. And that's what he did. He apologised subsequently, but wasn't kicked all around the churchyard by Ulrika Johnson, which I would have done. But he said, you can't believe in Santa Claus, because just think about it, how big that sack would have to be to put all those DVDs in that you've asked for, and the reindeer will just be pulverised, and then he did E=MC² up on the blackboard. Brought many people to God that way, I would think.
I would have thought the old scientific proof was an unfortunate thread for a vicar to start pulling on, really.
If you were real, the vicar said, Santa would have to deliver 378 million presents in 31 hours. Almost as many as Parcel Force can lose in an afternoon. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Yes, Simon, this is from the Daily Telegraph. From the new Wembley Stadium website, in fact. There will be 2,000 toilets in the stadium, more than any other building in Britain. Inside the bowl, fans will be pleasantly surprised by the amount of space they have.
Well, this is from a newspaper, I don't know what it's called, in Zimbabwe, and someone sent it in saying, in particular, they've highlighted the bit that says, the man who swallowed a fork in order to make himself vomit. Mm. But then next to that, I notice, this is a little chart, regular thing, I suppose, in a Zimbabwe newspaper, this week's top 10 longest snakes. I'll give you a couple of examples. 9, diamondback rattlesnake, 2.7 metres. 6, boa constrictor. Do you reckon they've had it on the radio on a Sunday night? Meanwhile, at number 2, it's anaconda at 8.5, but straight in this week. It's number 1. Yes, it's there again for Christmas. The reticulated python, 10.7 metres. We'll be back.
Do you not think it's perhaps more like the shipping forecast and they play slithering by?
King Cobra, 8, rising to 8.5.
Boa constrictor 3 metres? Good.
Linda.
This isn't... where is it? Oh, yeah. This is an item... oh, is it? Sorry, you all seem terribly far away. Oh, yeah. This is an item from the...
Linda.
Father says I shall never be well. I've had a feeling of deja vu. This was sent in by George Graham. It's from the Selkirk Advertiser. The South of Scotland Budgerigar Club has a best feather competition on Wednesday in the Bonacord Hotel. Frank Brown of Selkirk won with an outstanding light green cock.
Alan. I hardly like to follow that, Simon. But there's nothing I can do about it because it's from a Richard Gere interview in last Sunday's Mail. And he says, Gere says, we all do what our hormones are telling us. As a young man, I was interested in exploring erotic ideas. But as a 53-year-old, I find that sex isn't in my face all the time. That's probably a modern expression of some kind.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Well, Francis and Mark have an excellent 14. Alan and Linda are this week's winners with 17 points. Before we leave you, here's a personal ad from the Algarve Resident magazine.
Divorced Englishman, mid-50s, slim, active, good sense of humour, likes music, dancing, going out and gardening, looking for female or similar.
With that, goodbye!
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Green, Linda Smith and Mark Steele. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Paul McKenzie, Simon Littlefield and George Poles, and the producer was Simon Nichols.
And we start round three with a cutting from the sports pages of the Nuneaton Weekly Tribune.
Nuneaton Borough and Rugby United are both looking forward to the prospect of mouth-watering in the third round of the FA Trophy.
I think it's very funny. Try it again. Let's see. We liked it when we heard it.
This is very, very funny.
Give the kid a chance.
Nuneaton Borough and Rugby United are both looking forward to the prospect of mouth-watering in the third round of the FA Trophy.
No, they were clapping your delivery, Brian, not laughing at the joke.